Let's go to the phones and welcome in our guest. Fresh off his first Bedlam football appearance from Caesars Palace in Las Vegas, Todd Furman. Todd, what kind of rating would you give the Bedlam weekend experience?
I would give the Bedlam weekend experience about a 9.5 out of 10. The only thing I wouldn't rate that highly was Oklahoma's performance in Bedlam. But I will say one thing. Man, I forget how cozy it is to watch games in a sports book versus dealing with 50-mile-an-hour winds and 35-degree game-time temperatures.
Well, at least we sat on the north side of the stadium.
We were in good shape. It was a great chance to soak up the atmosphere and the rivalries that make college football great. I mean, to see Bedlam live and in the flesh was so much on the line for Oklahoma State. I think a well-deserved trip to the Fiesta Bowl now. I know we had talked a little bit about their prospects for a BCS national title berth, but I'm of the mindset that they got the matchup right in Alabama and LSU are the two best teams in the country.
Well, and we also have the answer of whether or not we could drink Eskimo Joe's out of beer. So the answer was no. But
we did give it a valiant effort. I know Gottlieb tried to push the envelope a little bit, but Eskimos did live up to the challenge and was able to conquer the Mark Rogers and Todd Furman show for the weekend.
Every time I see Gottlieb, he has some kind of clothing on that I highly disapprove of. This time it was some sort of Puma shoes that looked like they were being sold in Rio de Janeiro rather than Connecticut or Oklahoma. So
I'm wondering if he's got an endorsement deal that he hasn't divulged to the general public for some of the gear he was sporting in honor of his return trip to Stillwater.
Yeah, he's looking for one. So, hey, you've been hot in basketball, man. I mean, very nice. Gottlieb's also taking credit for picking some good ones.
I would say every now and again I try and share some wisdom for some of the information we get and try and take a look. I'm a big proponent that college basketball does provide some of the softest numbers out there, and you're not going to hear bookmakers openly admit to that, but with so many games on a nightly basis for aspiring gamblers out there, you're going to find a lot more value betting college basketball this time of year than you will in either the bowl games or the NFL schedule.
All right, there's a very interesting game tonight in college basketball that I want to ask you about. And I do want to ask you about Oklahoma and Oral Roberts. But Connecticut and Harvard, the smart guys, the wise guys know that Harvard has a very good basketball team. Doug's been he's been all over them on ESPN. You've told me about how good they are. They've got a chance possibly to go undefeated. But, man, I just see athletes at Connecticut and not great athletes at Harvard. Connecticut's only a 6-point favorite tonight. You would probably take the dog, I'm going to guess, but I would lay the points with UConn.
I actually think, Mark, that this number is a little deflated based on what we've seen out of Harvard so far. My power numbers actually make UConn about an 8 to 8.5 point favorite in this game. So I do think there's value in a Huskies team only laying 6 in their own building against a team from the Ivy League. All that being said, I'm not sure right now, with as well as Harvard is playing defensively, that I want to step in front of what Tommy Amaker is building up there in Cambridge. I do think, though, that UConn has to warrant a long look, laying such a short price. But I think this will be one of the more intriguing games of the early season. You know, Harvard's schedule shapes up very favorably. But if they were to get through UConn tonight, it wouldn't shock me in the least if they had a letdown on Saturday against BU. Unfortunately, bettors won't have a chance to take advantage of that if the Crimson pull off the upset tonight.
All right, what do you have on Oklahoma and Oral Roberts? 5.5-point line. Oh, you got to admit, I think OU under Lon Kruger, and you know Lon well from being in Vegas, they perform very well this season, better than I expected.
There's no question. I mean, Oklahoma was a team that, you know, I had power rated pretty low coming into this season, given some of the overhaul and the changes. But Lon Kruger's done a pretty impressive job getting the players to buy into his style right off the bat. Now, Oklahoma hasn't exactly played the toughest of schedules, but getting to the championship of the 76 Classic and being exposed to a team in St. Louis who I think is going to be a Sweet 16 team late in the year, a great challenge tonight to step up against an in-state, I don't think I want to call them a rival, but this is an Oral program right now who's headed in the right direction, big things in their future. 5.5, I think, is a pretty accurate number, which is rare, though, when you talk about teams from the Summit League, you know, matching up against teams from the power conference like the Big 12.
All right, very interesting. Let's talk a little football. We've got the bowl lines out. Oklahoma State favored over Stanford. Have you seen any money movement in that game? And second half of my doubleheader question is, where has the money moved the most in the bowl lines?
The largest bowl move actually has been on the Idaho Potato Bowl between Utah State and Ohio. The Bobcats opened as 2-point favorites in a lot of reputable offshore joints, and they are now catching 3. So you're talking about nearly a 5-point line move in a Utah State-Ohio game. I think we may see a difference in class. I mean, this Utah State team performed extremely well going down to Jordan-Hare against Auburn earlier in the year, but this far out, a little tough to tell what some of the professionals are up to. Also seeing a little bit of movement around key numbers in the Louisville-NC State game. Number opened up right around a pick'em, but NC State has been bet up to about a 2.5-point favorite. Impossible to argue with the success that Tom O'Brien has achieved in his illustrious coaching career when you talk about against the spread results in bowl games. Seen a little bit of money come in on the Washington Huskies against Baylor. Always a good scenario, assuming that Robert Griffin III will end up winning the Heisman Trophy, to go against the Heisman Trophy winner, especially in a second-tier bowl. You know it inspires the defense to want to go out there and try and stop them. When you talk about bigger bowl games, we've seen nothing but Oklahoma State money come in, but it hasn't been from the wise guys. It's been the betting public right now really latching on to the Cowboys. And I think as this number sits at 3.5, we will see some of the professionals come in and take Stanford as we get closer to kickoff. It's going to be a tough matchup for the Pokes when you talk about a physical defense, and Stanford will finally have some of their weapons back. I know they've desperately missed their tight end play over the last 3 or 4 games.
Hey, I am a believer in the Heisman jinx in bowl games. Just after covering a couple of Heismans in New York and seeing the kind of treatment that those guys get and knowing that, oh, we got to go back to practice the next day. I mean, it kind of pretends of what's ahead for you when you become a professional athlete and the perks of life increase a bunch, over what the training table was in college. So I think that's to me, fading Baylor in the bowl is probably a pretty good pick because I don't like Baylor a whole lot. I lost my train of thought. There was another question that I was going to ask you. All right, give me the methodology of open the national championship line. How do you guys factor that in? We've seen the game before. It was very close. This time LSU is going to have the home field advantage. So how do you set a line on that game?
This is a team, I mean, LSU, that I've been reluctant to adjust their power rating as the season's gone. I know that I thought this team was going to find a way to falter given Les Miles' track record, but they've exceeded my expectations. Each of the last 2 weeks they spotted very good SEC opponents in both Arkansas and Georgia, double-digit leads, and they came back and barnstormed both of those teams, winning the game, going away in tremendous fashion. LSU, we opened as a 1.5-point favorite, immediately took sharp money on Alabama, driving that number down to a pick'em. Since we got down to a pick, we've seen a steady trickle of LSU money come in, and we're sitting with LSU -1 right now with a total of 39.5. I do think the total is a little bit low. I know it's going to sound a little bit unusual, considering that we saw a 9-6 game between these two teams the first time they met. But I think given the advanced preparation, the incorporation of Jordan Jefferson into this offense, he's given LSU that X factor. And right now, all things being equal, I'd have to side with LSU being the side in the national title. But with 4 weeks to go before we'll actually see these two teams get together on the football field, an awful lot can change.
Totally agree with that, although I was an overbetter in the first game. And that ticket is laying on the table in your joint. How about the Oklahoma game? 15.5?
Down to 14 now, Mark. I think there's a lot of bettors out there who echo your
take that wager
sentiments.
In corn?
they're believing that Kirk Ferentz will have his boys ready to go. We talk about, you know, looking at these bowl games, motivation is such a key component for these teams, especially when you talk about double-digit favorites like Oklahoma has, you know, wrapped around their neck in this game. I imagine all of Sooner Nation envisioned a much greater season out of the talented core they brought back. The offense has struggled without Ryan Broyles. I mean, what does Oklahoma really have to play for? Will a win over Iowa, especially covering 2 touchdowns, really validate this season? I can't see it, and I think the Iowa Hawkeyes have to be considered extremely live in this spot when you talk about catching damn near 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, I would agree with that for sure. I think that you take the points in that game. Definitely. Anything in the NFL this weekend that's got your attention?
I think there's a couple interesting games, the most intriguing of which will be the Sunday night game between Dallas and the Giants. I mean, Dallas had a chance to get a stronghold on the division if Jason Garrett hadn't iced his own kicker late in the game against the Arizona Cardinals. This is a Giant team who gave Green Bay all they can handle, but awfully tough to duplicate those type of efforts in back-to-back weeks. Looking at an Oakland Raider team catching double digits, I think the Raiders have the perfect formula to try and keep this Green Bay offense on the sidelines, catching 11. all that. I just don't know if the travel for Oakland, having played Miami last week, going back to Green Bay 2 weeks in a row, will put them in a real good spot. There is one underdog that I would say warrants a very long look. I think you have to go back to the Cardinals this week against the Niners. San Francisco wrapped up their division. No, they're not going to get the one seed and be able to catch Green Bay. So maybe this is an Arizona team now starting to get their feet underneath them with a healthy Kevin Cobb. They can be looked at as a live underdog catching four against San Francisco.
You know, the Packers are either going undefeated or would you condone betting Oakland on the money line in a shocking turn of events?
I'm not sure I'd go that far. I mean, for Oakland to win this game, I think they would need a healthy Darren McFadden. And by all accounts, he's still about a little over a week away from returning at this point. I just can't see it. An interesting side note to that, we actually had Green Bay listed at plus 160 to go undefeated going into the Giants game. They are now minus 180 to go undefeated, as the Packers will be double-digit favorites in each of their four final games this season.
I'm very disappointed that you, I've learned via Twitter that you're just now watching Eastbound and Down.
Sometimes it takes a little while to come around when your life is inundated with watching live sporting events, as I know yours is. You know, it takes
I watch a lot of sports. I mean, that's kind of sports.
It takes a little bit for an eye-opening experience, so I have to defer to some of my loyal followers on Twitter who told me I was missing out on a great opportunity to watch a show. Sat down last night, watched it, and decided it's something that I think I'm going to invest a little bit more free time in as we get closer to Season 3, which will kick off in February.
Hey, you know, I shouldn't have to tell you this, that story is based on morphing the lives of John Rocker and Jim Traber.
Well, I know from
I mean, Traber played in Mexico, which was Season 2, the mullets, the attitude, it's all there. I mean, it is right there in front of you.
I'm just wondering if Traber is able to collect royalties off of this fine TV show and if
I
he feels
sue.
Comfortable with some of the dialogue.
No, he doesn't feel comfortable with the dialogue, but I'm telling you this, 1984 Jim Traber felt very comfortable with all of that. Trust me. All right?
Marco,
2011, Marco, Traber, no.
I want to know, are we going through a mourning period for the St. Louis Cardinals now with Albert Pujols taking his talents to Disneyland?
It is a weird feeling. It's a very weird feeling today, but I think it's the right move. I even think that the Cardinals, what they offered was too much. I mean, I can't blame the team for that's that kind of money they couldn't afford to shell out unless they wanted to go through some years of just with a void. So I think they'll be able to, over the next 4 or 5 years, sign some players that are good because people want to play in St. Louis. It's a great town for baseball, and the Cardinals have got a long story tradition. But you got to wish Albert well, you know.
It'll be awfully interesting. I was surprised.
What do you? I mean, you agree, right?
I think it's a great move. I mean, from a long term standpoint, yes. Over the next 2 to 3 years, Albert will still be able to continue to produce at this high level. But you're talking about a 31-year-old slugger getting a 10-year deal. I'm a Yankee fan and know what A-Rod's contract has been, an albatross around the Yankees' neck. I think St. Louis, you know, made the right move. I think the Angels have created a little bit of a logjam now. You talk about young sluggers like Mark Trumbo, Kendry Morales,
yeah.
Mike Trout in the mix. Where are all those at-bats going to come from? And can this team find a way to incorporate all this talent? And will Albert still have the same hunger in his belly, having won the World Series last year with St. Louis, now getting his big payday?
Well, it is a little bit of a shock to see Anaheim. Although you gave me some info on Sunday, you said that I should prepare myself, so I did indeed do that. Always great to talk to you, Todd. We'll do it again soon next week.
Great catching up, Mark, and I can't thank the sports animal community for the great hospitality they provided throughout the weekend. It's always great to come out to Oklahoma, get a chance to meet some of the listeners and followers on Twitter. So I have you to thank for that.
We should probably also pimp Logan's too in Norman. It was a doubleheader weekend.
they
thank you, Todd.
Did. I can't give Eskimo Joe's too much credit. Thanks again, Mark.